Hi, it's Francis Lamb, and welcome to our little baby mini podcast, Splendid Table Selects. This is where we're going to throw out some of our deep cuts, you know, the interviews that really surprised us, or showed us something new, or just made us better cooks. The presenting sponsor of Splendid Table Selects is Bob's Red Mill, producers of great whole grains and other organic and gluten-free foods, from things like almond flour and nutritional yeast to muesli and oatmeal. And look, for most of my life, I thought oatmeal was one thing, and that thing was gross. It's like mushy and sticky and the definition of bland, but Bob's Red Mill steel-cut oats actually have texture. They have a little bit of chew, and they have real sweet oat flavor. We'll get into more about steel-cut oats later, but right now, we're going to go to this week's conversation. For a lot of us, February tends to be cold, bleak, and kind of dull. But in Switzerland, you can live for winter because they have fondue. And I don't mean like cheesy 70s swingers fondue. I mean Swiss fondue is an art. The writer Tim Neville spent time there and studied that art with a fourth generation cheesemaker named Fred Fischer, the fondue king of Bern. Our contributor David Leet met up with Tim to talk about what he learned.
Welcome to the show, Tim.
Thanks for having me.
So fondue, huh?
I love it. Absolutely brilliant.
Tell me, how did you go from the idea of what we know in America as fondue to this trek all the way to Switzerland to find out the mysteries of fondue?
Well, you know, I missed out on that whole U.S. fondue thing. And, you know, I grew up in the 80s and, you know, for whatever reason, my parents weren't into the fondue thing. And so I was 18 the first time I had it. And it was in Switzerland. I had, after high school, I really didn't know what I wanted to do. Finally got this brilliant idea that I would go to Switzerland as an exchange student. I liked French. I liked to ski. And so living outside of Geneva for that year really opened my eyes to a lot of things. And one of the things that's kind of really stayed with me, of course, is cheese. And one wintry night, kind of right around Christmas, my host father made a fondue, and I had never heard of such a thing. And so, you know, all of a sudden our house just starts smelling like what I thought was a Foot Locker. I mean, it was just this horrible pungent smell. And, you know, we sat down and you know, I tried it and wow, I mean, a whole new world opened up to me.
You know, maybe so it blew you away.
Totally blew me away. Anyway, so yeah, so long story short, you know, that was 25 years ago. And then my relationship with fondue has sort of faded for a little while. But then my wife and I, we got a chance to move back to Switzerland a few years ago. And there I sort of really dug in. And when we moved back to Oregon in 2011, I was determined to sort of keep that spirit alive of what I'd learned about fondue. But I realized I didn't really know that much. I could just go down to the grocery store in Switzerland and buy my little packet of cheeses, you know, just as easily as, you know, here you could buy tortillas. And, you know, but I didn't really I didn't know fondue. I didn't know it.
So
I pitched a magazine. I said, you know, I'd love to go back to Switzerland and find the old school cheese masters who could take me deep into the ways of the fondue.
And who were those cheese masters, those king of cheeses that you talk about?
Well, the main guy would be this guy by the name of Fred Fischer, or Fred Fischer, as the Swiss like to say.
Fred Fischer.
And he's this fourth generation dairyman. He had run a cheese shop in a little town outside of Bern called the Chazi, which is just cheese shop in Swiss German. What he did, which I thought was really interesting, was, you know, he's a businessman. So he's like, I've got all these cheeses, and he had cheeses that no other people had. And so he started blending them. He started taking a little bit from this one, a little bit from that one, and coming up with these recipes. And, you know, by the time he was done, he had penned 50 different fondue recipes. You know, classic fondue might involve two cheeses, let's say. Well, his blends would involve seven cheeses. And one of those cheeses, like a classic fondue cheese, a Gruyere cheese, he might use three different ages. And so, and then he would start adding all these different ingredients to it, things that the Swiss would be like, why are you adding pesto, you know, to your fondue? Or why are you adding whiskey? And came up with all these wonderful names for his different fondues, you know, the James Bond fondue, the flambé fondue, the fireman fondue, and all these different things. So he ended up being the master who sort of taught me what it is, you know, made me the master, let's say.
Okay. So let's take a step back. Let's talk about the basic cheeses, those two cheeses that must be in there as a base.
Sure. Okay. So when you go to Switzerland, like the classic fondue is going to have a base of Gruyere and Vacherin. Mm-hmm. And Gruyere is like different than, you know, what you think of like Wisconsin Gruyere. It's Le Gruyere. So it's a Gruyere cheese made sort of in the Préalp region of Switzerland. So both of those cheeses come from there. So the classic recipe is what they call a moitié-moitié, so a half and half. So it's half Gruyere and half Vacherin. And then a white wine and then Kirsch. Fondue is a little bit like, I guess, like biscuits or something. Like everybody has their own way
recipe
of making it. So it may seem like a very simple dish, but you can go crazy with it, which
so
is what I love.
So take us through making a fondue. How would we do it?
The wonderful thing about today is a lot of these cheeses are actually not so difficult to get. Trader Joe's actually carries the real Gruyere. Vacherin,
imported
you have to
look Gruyere in, is what you're talking about.
It is,
right?
But they imported? Have it under their own label. But the first time I tasted it, I was like, this is the real Gruyere for sure. Mm. So you want that. And then Vacherin you have to get from usually, you know, a cheese specialty shop or like a gourmet grocer. And if you can't find Vacherin, you can use something like an Emmental cheese. Emmental has a much more neutral flavor to it. And so automatically, in my opinion, your fondue is going to be stepped down just a little bit. So really try to find that Vacherin if you can. I learned how to make a fondue using the metric system. So you're going to want a scale and then like one of those glass Pyrex measuring cups with metric units on it as well. And so the key formula, and fondue is all about the formula, is 200 grams of cheese per person. That's about 7 ounces of cheese per person. But no one ever eats fondue alone. So you're going to always think of it in terms of two. So roughly then 400 grams of cheese for every two people. And you want to have your cheese chopped up into small cubes or grated. Now, you want a nice fondue pot. Mine's ceramic. You just want something that other people have metal ones, which I'm not such a fan of. But you want something that's going to like help distribute the heat more evenly. And so you're going to take some garlic and you're going to rub the clove of garlic around the inside and the bottom of the pot. Just kind of smear it around. Chop up the rest, throw it in. Throw your cheese in, throw your wine in. And then ideally, you want to let that sit. This is something that Fred taught me. You want to let it sit for at least an hour. Just let it get all kind of gooey all in there before you start heating it up over a stove, about medium heat. Now, another key thing is that you want to add starch, and that's roughly 1 teaspoon of cornstarch per person. And then as you begin to heat this up, you want to use a wooden spoon with the hole in it and stir slowly in a figure eight, just kind of like easily getting it going real lazily. Yeah, exactly. Like you don't want to bring this thing to a roiling boil by any means. You just kind of want it to melt nice and slowly. And what's going to happen, and I used to panic with this, is that it begins to separate and you're like, oh no, I've ruined it. Take a deep breath, just wait, and it should all come back together. Now, one of the fun things to do is to add just a little bit of Kirsch. Sometimes, you know, if I'm feeling like it, I'll have some, I'll add the cornstarch to the Kirsch and mix it in that way and add that in as everything's getting all liquidy and just kind of let that get in there. And that really gives it an aromatic kick to it, I guess. Other people will just keep Kirsch, like a nice cherry brandy, off on the side and they'll dip their square cubes of bread into the Kirsch before they dip it into the pot of cheese.
That sounds delicious.
Oh, it's absolutely wonderful.
Tim, thanks for coming on the show. You have made all of us very hungry. I'm sure we're going to run off right now and get those cheeses from our local cheesemonger.
I sure hope so. Happy fondueing.
Thanks.
That was Splendid Table contributor David Leet with Tim Neville, who writes frequently about the outdoors, adventure, and the business of both for Outside, Ski, and the New York Times. Check out our Fondue Manifesto and that recipe for 007 Fondue. They're both at splendidtable.org. And hey, if this conversation inspires you to make some fondue, take some pictures and share them with us on Twitter or Instagram. We'd really love to see them. The presenting sponsor of Splendid Table Select is Bob's Red Mill, dedicated to high-quality whole grains and other organic foods. So let's talk about steel-cut oats for a second. These are whole oat grains, which are actually called groats, so keep that in mind next time you do your crossword. But they take those grains and they toast them and then cut them into smaller pieces, which makes them chunky. Now, usually, you know, when you open up the can of oatmeal, they're flat because those oats have been just like flattened out by a giant roller. But by cutting the oats into little bits, you keep that texture so you can cook them in all kinds of different ways. You can certainly make them like oatmeal, and they take a little longer to cook, but they keep a little bit of that chew. Or you can treat them like risotto, you know, where you toast them in a pan and a little bit of butter or fat, and then you add some nice liquid and keep stirring it until it's absorbed. Now, it'll leach out some of its starch because it is still oats, right? And it'll make it nice and thick, but you can make it into a savory dish. Now, honestly, if you would have told me 3 years ago, hey, Francis, one day you're going to be on the radio talking about savory oatmeal, I would look at you like you were totally crazy, but here I am. But I'm super into whole grains these days, and I have been eating farro that way and barley that way and, you know, just experimenting with new ways to cook whole grains. So there's a recipe for savory oatmeal with baked eggs at bobsredmill.com. You can check that out, and maybe that's a great place to start. I'm Francis Lamb, and thank you for listening.
I'm Tanya Mosley. In 1987, my sister Anita vanished without a trace. Decades later, thanks to DNA, we found her. But that's only the beginning of the story. She Has a Name is a new audio documentary that explores the search for redemption, confronting trauma, and healing in the face of unimaginable loss. Subscribe now to Truth Be Told Presents She Has a Name, where every revelation brings us closer to the truth.